This is KCBX, Central Coast Public Radio, here on NPR One.
My name's Steve Newsom. I'm one of the partners and general manager here at English Newsom Cellars, which was formerly Caprock Winery.
And this is Lubbock.
Yes, sir, Lubbock, Texas.
Yeah, the high country.
Yeah.
It's very different Texas than central Texas or the hill country.
Yeah, definitely on the geography. I think you'll find definitely more of a pioneering spirit up here. It can be kind of a challenging place to grow certain crops. And the Lubbock area really exploded after the oil boom. There's still almost a pioneering mentality here. Mm-hmm. So challenges, new things tend to really go off well here.
Mm-hmm. Not to divert too much, but it's a unique and distinctive, interesting geological area. Yep. You're up on this high ridge, and you're what, near the Permian Basin, right?
Yeah, so oil-wise, they consider the oil basin the northern Permian Basin, but the actual definition of the region is the Caprock. If you head east, like you're going to Dallas, you'll go off the Caprock, and you can make as much as a 600 to 1,000-foot drop in elevation. There, it's literally like a ridge that sits up here. It falls back almost to, I think I've read Ice Age or post-glacial result of this, but it's up on the Caprock.
And so being on top of the Caprock, this is really a defining reason for why Lubbock is what it is, right?
It does, and if you're referring specifically to the wine industry, it definitely does. So Lubbock, by wine growing definitions, is in a rain shield. So we're east of the mountains. The mountains drain the majority of the rain, even though we still get about 18 inches a year. We get weather patterns that are much more similar to a Mediterranean type climate, and it would explain why a lot of the Mediterranean varietals really grow well here.
And the altitude would give you less humidity?
Quite a bit less, yeah. Both the altitude and the fact we're in a rain shield, both of those factors define our weather. So we get polar fronts that come in, they hit the Rockies, and they go east. A lot of that defines our humidities, and then just the general elevation as a whole keeps our humidities low.
I think one of the untold secrets of Texas is the myth and legend and lore of Fredericksburg and the Hill Country, which I love. Don't get me wrong.
We do too.
That's
yeah.
Where my mom lives.
Yeah.
But if you don't know, you would think that the majority of Texas grapes are grown in the Hill Country.
Well, and it would be a easy mistake to make because the majority of Texas wineries are in the Hill Country. But the grapes are grown up here because of the distance. What we have to do, we harvest them at night. Temperatures are lower. Fermentation isn't started. They get put on a refrigerated truck. They'll leave here about 4 or 5 a.m., and they show up to Fredericksburg by noon, go right into a press. It's a good system. They've got for them. Not so much for us, but it's a good system for them. They don't have the headaches of wine growing. They get a quality grape, and they get all the tourism to sell wine, too.
And again, Texas is such a diverse country. You go out way out in the Amistad Mountains, 10,000-foot tall mountains in Texas. You know, it's a diverse geography. All said and done, is Lubbock kind of the star of grape growing of Texas?
Well, there's no doubt. There's no doubt. And if you give any of these wineries anywhere in the state the opportunity, they're going to buy Texas High Plains grapes. They want grapes from up here in this AVA, and it's called the Texas High Plains AVA.
Nobody competes with you in the whole state of Texas.
Well, definitely not on yield, quality, consistency. Even with the challenges we have, this is the best place to grow grapes. And a lot of the factors that work is negative as far as cold winters. Mm-hmm. We have some really cold winters here. Kill out a lot of disease. Kill out a lot of insects. Wind. Low relative humidities, low disease pressure. Sand, which moves through the air with these winds, really great growing media.
Interesting. And the other thing we talked about is just rainfall and the water table and whatnot. And
so one of the biggest challenges we have is finding that fine line between stressing the grapes and having too much canopy. We want the canopy to be managed without putting any undue stress during the peak growing times on the grape. The problem is sometimes we get seasonal rainfall that's untimely, and say I've been irrigating, Then we get rainfall. Now we've got the challenge of how do we keep this canopy from overproducing. So we have to do some things that not every region of the world does, like shoot thinning, et cetera. If we get some excessive rainfall, we just have to, you know, often it's cross your fingers, pray, whichever method, and just hope that things are timely. The flip side of that is because they're well-drained soils, generally if we get excess rainfall, they do percolate through pretty quick.
So you describe it as a sandy loam?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Sandy loam and loamy sand are the two predominant types of soil where the grapes are grown. In the counties around Lubbock, sandy loam's number one, loamy sand's right there beside it.
Okay. And come harvest time, is that a panic sometimes with weather and temperature?
100% it's a panic. Sleepless nights, you just go ahead and give that up because you're going to be harvesting at night, number one. Mm-hmm. But if you're not harvesting, you're probably stressing. By and large, the whites generally come off, in my experience, a little less stressful because they're a little bit earlier in August, a little lower rainfall. The reds, which tend to have a higher price, tend to be a little more volatile, they get ready during some of our normal heavier rainfall times like September.
So you're not only a grower, you're a producer of finished wines. Talk to us about that, the breadth of what you do and what your stars. Who are your stars?
Well, stars as far as varietals.
Yeah, your different wines.
We have stars in the vineyard and we have stars in the winery. Stars in the vineyard on the Texas High Plains tend to be Tempranillo, Mourvedre, Merlot to a lesser degree. And stars in the winery nearly always have to lead with Cabernet. It's what the consumer knows. We make a beautiful Cabernet here. It doesn't yield as well as we would like here on the Texas High Plains. But we're at that balance where you have to find what the consumer knows and draw them in and then try to coach them on what really grows well here, really produces well, makes a nice wine.
We talked about some grape varietals that are awesome, but they're kind of off the radar. People don't understand. The name doesn't even mean anything to them.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Talk to us about some of those grapes.
Number one, the biggest challenge we're up against is Texas is not historically a wine culture. So I think it's safe to say in this day and age, you know, a guy could come in off the range or off the farm in California and it not be unusual for that individual to think as much about wine as he would beer. Let's just take an old cowboy working, you know, in the Bakersville area or wherever. Texas being a beer state and not having a wine culture history, education falls is one of the biggest burdens we have in a winery is educating a consumer. I'm no different. I mean, 25 years ago, I wasn't a wine drinker. I became educated and understand it's you know, I love the beauty and the every part of a wine. I love not only my own wines, I love tasting wines from other places, but that challenge is huge for the industry here because outside of the, you know, small population areas, which are familiar more with California varietals, we have a monumental challenge educating consumers as to what grows well here in Texas.
It's interesting. You're a grower, you're a producer, and then you're a retail establishment in the sense that this is a wedding venue, a corporate meeting venue, free and independent, partier venue at times.
Yep. And it's a necessity. So, I mean, events draw consumers. One of the reasons the grower slash winemaker or wine producer, I'm not a winemaker, I'm a wine producer, work well together is it allows us the freedom to control quantity, acres, and varietals. Wasn't the original plan. I originally started just as a grower, and I sought out, you know, what does different wineries want from me as a grower. And as I evolved into the wine production, not all of the varietals I grow fit that model so well. So I've had some real challenges on blending, figuring out what the consumer is seeking, figuring out, again, redundantly, consumer education, finding that key to open the mind of the consumer. So we've met and are still have lots of challenges to meet to fill all those requirements.
You've had some home runs in the last 2-3 years.
We have.
And you're making a name for yourself, even in the West Coast. People in Napa and Sonoma are going, who? Who are these guys?
Well, and that'd be Texas High Plains more than myself, but we have had
but
some.
You yourself, you won, what, the San Francisco Chronicle?
We did.
Double gold?
Yeah. 2 years in a row, back-to-back, we had a Roussan that won double gold best of class at the Chronicle. We were blown away. We've had other wines. One of the first wines I, as a wine producer, One was a Malbec grown here on the Texas High Plains. I won a double gold best of class.
What year was that?
That was 2016. Mm-hmm. We won that with actually a 2015 vintage. Crazy. That was the first real light bulb that went off with me that we can compete with wines from anywhere. And, of course, those are up against Napa wines. Yeah. But the Roussanne was by and large the biggest. Winning it back-to-back really gave us some validation that we were headed in a good direction, choosing some good varietals.
And you've talked to and are friends with some California growers and producers, Santa Barbara and Central Coast.
Yeah, absolutely. There's been some really good influence. Often in industries you find people wanting to keep industry secrets, et cetera, close to the cuff. But we found that there's some people with good experience that are just fantastic people in this industry, and they've been extremely helpful. You know, if I was dropping a California name, I'd drop Louis Lucas because he's just such an incredible base of knowledge, and you can call this guy up any day.
He's down in Santa Barbara.
He's in Santa Barbara. He don't have to mess with me, and he does every time. He calls me back, and if I've got a challenge with something, he's been a huge asset. And we found that here on the High Plains. You know, there was a vanguard here that made tons of mistakes learning, had tons of success as well, and were so open and warm, you know, to tell us and advise us on the things to do and the things not to do. Fortunately for me, I wasn't the first grower here, and that kind of helped me not to flop completely. And some of the growers that came in ahead of us really did act as mentors and were extremely warm and helpful.
Let's go back in time, 1920s, 1910. What did the good old boys drink for wine? What grapes did they
produce? Oh, gosh. Back then, there wasn't even a California industry then. I figure in Texas, it was probably beer and beer is what I figure. I don't figure there was a whole lot of wine to drink back then.
They had the old country guys, you know, were dinking around.
Well, in the German communities in central Texas, like Fredericksburg, et cetera, you know that was beer.
Yeah, yeah.
In fact, a lot of that style of beer still influences a lot of the true Texas beers.
Mm-hmm. Very much so, yeah. Yeah. Okay, so today, if you had to come up with three or four or five grape varietals that are symbolic and representative of Lubbock High Plains, what would they be?
Well, I would say for sure from the reds, it would be Tempranillo, Morvedra, maybe Merlot to a lesser degree. And, of course, consumer-wise, we'll always have Cab. Cab will always be a definite staple for red wines. White wines, Viognier, we grow such a beautiful Viognier here. Lots of acres here and lots of consistency. I've mentioned I love growing and have had great success with Roussanne. We're finding there's some wines that a lot of the world aren't familiar with, like Albarino. Mm-hmm. Absolutely producing a beautiful Albarino here.
What's really interesting, every grape varietal you've just described are California stars, and yet people looking from the outside would go, what, Texas? You know, hot, da da da. They don't realize that at least in the high country here, you have that diurnal flux where you have a similar to a coastal environment.
Yeah, it really is. And that's kind of thankful to the rain shield and to the elevation, et cetera. We've had really good results from that. It brings us challenges sometimes, like the spring frost. That's our number one challenge really here as growers, is fighting spring frost.
So if you get a bud break
too early.
Too early. Yeah.
Yeah, and what will happen sometimes, it can get really hot here in February, and it'll start scaring the heck out of us. We're learning some management practices like the multi-prunings. We'll do multiple passes on prunings to set the vines back. So there's been some good adaption, some good, lots of different frost protection methods. These growers here will really work to find results, and so I think the industry has a bright future because of that pioneering spirit.
Cool. Well, unfortunately, I got to push on, but it was great to meet you and spend time with you.
Appreciate you as well. Yeah. I really do.
So if somebody wanted to learn more about your world, where would you direct them?
Well, I definitely direct them to EnglishNewsome.com. You can learn about the families, learn about the wines we produce. Obviously, we'd love it if you ordered some. We'd be glad to get them out to you. Good stories on everything we do there. And then, of course, visit Lubbock.com is a good place to learn about Lubbock and the Lubbock area as well. My name's Steve Newsom, English Newsom Sellers, and we look forward to seeing you.
Steven, thanks so much. What a pleasure. I'm Tom Wilmer, reporting from Lubbock, Texas. We'll see you here.
Can't get enough of Texas. It really is a treat. Folks everywhere say howdy.
My name is Roseanne Cash. I listen to WNYC in New York. In fact, NPR is all I listen to. And if I didn't have NPR, I would feel like my lifeline to the world has been cut. So, yes, please support your local NPR station.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. Produced by California Central Coast NPR affiliate KCBX. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, NPR One, iTunes, Stitcher.com, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world. To learn more about Tom Wilmer's journeys around America and the world, log on to thomaswilmer.com. Funding for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer is provided by Hawaiian Legacy Reforestation Initiative.
Hawaiian Legacy Hardwoods and Four Seasons Resort invite you to sponsor a legacy tree and contribute to the biodiversity of Hawaii. Legacy trees can honor an individual, commemorate an event, or memorialize a loved one. Every tree dedication is a living legacy and a gift which grows grander year after year. The best time to plant a tree was 20 years ago. The second best time is now.
Can't get enough of Texas. It really is a treat. Folks everywhere say howdy when you're walking down the street. And when that Texas moon gives out and I hear a sweet guitar,
oh,
I know I wouldn't trade all this for a round trip to the stars.
Oh.
I found myself a